How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is August 14th, 2012. You're at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Lots to talk about, including the go-home show, the go-home Raw for SummerSlam. And Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
What did you think of this go-home show?
I thought that the angle I thought that the show built to, which was with the Shawn Michaels deal with Brock Lesnar, I thought was very good. And I thought the show kind of 3 hours is just too long, and the show dragged like it often does. But the key thing is that you know the one main point of the angle, I mean, of the show was that. As far as the building for SummerSlam, I don't know. I just this definitely helped, but I still don't get this feeling that it's like a week before SummerSlam. I still feel that it's just like another pay-per-view coming up this week other than that one thing. But they definitely, I thought it was very good, you know. I mean, a lot of people had an idea of what they were doing, which they did. But as far as, the way it was done, I thought really good.
It's very clear this week that they consider this a one-match show. And they figure that it's SummerSlam.
They consider it a two-match show.
What's the second match? The John Cena?
The Punk match.
Yeah,
the
I guess so.
And Big Show.
I guess so. But that to me was just like, they're building it up like every other three-way we've seen a million times.
Yeah.
I'm not blown away with the build.
I don't feel like anything like a...
It's just a match.
A special match or anything like that. No, not
It's
at
just
all.
A match.
Yeah.
So to me, it just feels like they are considering this a one big match show, as in a big special match for the summer. And... I mean, I like the angle. Mostly the arm-breaking part when Brock snuck up on him and said, "I told you I was going to get you," and he dragged him out of the car and the screen went black. That was way too hokey for me. But, I mean, the whole deal, I think, it's pretty obvious. Sean talked about it in an interview. He's 47, I believe. He's got his hunting show. He's retired. He really can't afford to get hurt. So the only thing that he took was a single F5, and they protected him a lot, but they still managed to do a spot that played into the storyline. Brock put him in the Kimura, and as Hunter was running down to make the save, Paul screamed that if he took one more step, Brock was going to break Sean's arm. And of course, Hunter didn't want his friend's arm broken, so he didn't take another step, and the big dastardly heel broke the arm anyway and then ran away. It's actually great old school pro wrestling booking. But was it enough to blow this show out of the water? I don't know. But it helped.
I don't know that it was either. And I don't know that, before this, I didn't think that Lesnar meant much of anything. I mean, as far as, what that they had done. And now, I mean, I think the Lesnar-Heyman tandem is a really good heel tandem.
I really like them.
Yeah, Paul's tremendous.
Paul is great, and Brock is...
Brock's got something special.
Well, he always has, but today he was a great cowardly bully, and it was awesome.
Yeah. I thought that was very well done. But again, is that going to do 250,000 domestic buys? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think... I'm leaning towards no.
I'm leaning towards about 220.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a safe number. The other thing about this show, I'm actually going to start at the beginning and we'll review the whole thing, but I really thought about it in the opening match on this show. They obviously are trying to get people to watch the first hour. They announced CM Punk and Big Show was going to open the program, which it did, and they had a match that ended up with a schmoz. Daniel Bryan came out, he interfered, John Cena made the save, AJ came out and announced a tag team match for later, which, by the way, was Daniel Bryan and the Big Show against John Cena and CM Punk. And this was the first week that I noticed it, really. Maybe a lot of people have noticed it before I did, but this was the first week that I noticed it. The easiest way to get fans to stop caring about a guy is to, I guess the best way to put it is, have him be that tweener, like CM Punk is right now. He worked this match in the babyface role, and then they teamed him up with a babyface, that being CM Punk, and he wasn't supposed to get along with the guy. But they've done this deal with CM Punk where he turned heel, but I guess they're building towards the big, maybe they are, I don't know, but they've kind of, to me, half-assed it for the last 3 or 4 weeks now. And to me, it feels like, and this was the first week I noticed it, that people really don't care about Punk like they used to. I mean, obviously they don't care about him as a babyface, but I don't think they really care about him that much as a heel. And the easiest way to do that is to give him that half-ass role. Are you supposed to cheer him? Are you supposed to boo him? Where is he? And I think he's in a very bad spot right now.
Well, I think that they don't want... It's this thing where we all know he's going heel, but the gimmick is that he's protesting it, which is supposed to make him more of a heel, when he finally, like, just overtly, you know, pulls the trigger because he's told you that he's not. I'm not a heel. I'm not... I mean, he basically said that in the interview. I'm not a heel. I'm not a heel. So we're going like, well, he's saying that he's not. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And then he's going to, like, do something where there's no doubt, and it's like you would get madder in theory. This was the tonight. The other thing on tonight was is that this was probably since WrestleMania. This was the most that John Cena has been booed in any television shoot that I can recall. I mean, he's been, you know, somewhat, you know, he'll get booed here and there, and they'll do the dueling chant. But this was like the old days where, you know, he was really booed, and when they did the dueling chant, the Cena sucks was way louder than the Let's Go Cena. So I don't know what I don't know if it was just Dallas or somehow this is also, you know, in turning Punk, somehow some people are resenting Cena. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but it was interesting to see that.
So after that match, AJ announced the tag team match for later, and then they announced that Lesnar and Triple H, after all this time, tonight they're going to sign the contract. So that was the main event of the show. And by the way, we were talking about this yesterday, the whole deal with the world title scenario where they have removed Alberto Del Rio from the match, supposedly, and kind of figured that here it is, the go-home Raw. They'd settle the situation, let you know what the match is. In fact, they didn't. They simply aired a tout, everybody, from Alberto Del Rio, who announced that Friday he was going to have a talk with Booker T because he had signed a contract for this match, and you can't just take the match away from him. And Friday on SmackDown, they're going to handle the situation. There was no Sheamus on this show. There was no Alberto Del Rio outside the tout. There was no Randy Orton, who I'm still figuring is going to end up in that match, although maybe he won't. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it may just end up being Sheamus and Del Rio. I
mean, talk about blowing this match off.
The way it was promoted, you didn't really leave room for it. It wasn't, you know, nobody else was being promoted for that match.
No. So that's the follow up there. We had JTG backstage. He appeared on Raw, believe it or not, and he was complaining, and he talked about how it was crazy that he couldn't get a match on the show. And of course, he said this right as AJ skipped by. So she signed him to a match and said it would be next. So, of course, you know what that meant. It was Ryback. Ryback destroyed JTG, killed him, and then after the match, Cole said, "Can't wait to read JTG's tweets about this."
So what did JTG tweet about this?
That's a good question. Let's find out here. I actually didn't even check before we went on the air. Let's see what he said. Presumably, if I type in JTG Twitter, it'll come up, but apparently not. Do a little bit more investigation here. I can't find his... Oh, here we go. It's probably him. Have to find all this stuff on WWE.com. While I find it, we'll go on to the next segment here. Anything on the Ryback match you'd like to comment on?
No, I mean, it was just fun. I mean, it was quite interesting. I mean, it was clearly meant to punish him, and he took some nasty stuff. I mean, the clothesline and all that, and it was, it was definitely an FU.
I got his Twitter. It's JTG1284, which I believe is probably the month and year that he was born. And, in fact, he did not tweet about this at all. His final tweet was from August 6th, well, over a week ago. Nobody wants to speak up. Everybody's afraid of losing their job or getting taken off TV. He hasn't tweeted since.
Yeah, and they had. Did you hear about the meeting today?
No, I didn't.
They had a team meeting today before the show, and in fact, I don't believe anybody spoke up because everybody's afraid to lose their job, and everything's the same.
So, do you mean they asked if anyone has anything to say, speak now or forever hold your peace and no one spoke?
I think, yeah, pretty much.
About that.
And it was basically a meeting about...
Approved JTG right meeting?
What?
Approved JTG right meeting?
No. It was a meeting about, they heard all the, there's all these grievances now. Do you guys have any grievances? And then it was like, nobody said they did. And it was just like, okay, there's some rules of thumb. And the basic gist is, use common sense. Don't be an idiot. And everybody should be okay.
I'm sure that'll solve all the problems.
Yeah. Well, they also did send out a memo to all the guys who were on that Brazil show that there was, in fact, a clerical error in the payoffs and that, in fact, a new check is coming.
Oh, wow. Yes. Was it the same clerk that screwed up the Rocks deal when he...
I was thinking that when I heard about it.
Clerical error.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of years, but they might have like the one clerk who makes these clerical errors.
Yeah. He doesn't know any math, but he's great in the gym. That's how he got his job.
Well, I mean, it's they have different people handling payoffs now than a few weeks ago, so I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say, but that was very interesting. So, whatever. But yeah, as far as this was definitely a message to everybody that you want to complain, because there were people who were working at coming up with like an idea for JTG and all that, and it was like I think that. On Friday, Vince was very anti-manager, and Friday was when the show was being written. So next Friday, he may have a different opinion, but this past Friday, he was very anti-manager.
Ryback was very over, by the way.
Did a lot of Goldberg chants.
Goldberg chants and feed me more chants.
Well, they gave him new entrance music, and the idea that they're going with is to get people to chant feed me more when he comes out, since his entrance music has people chanting, feed me more, feed me more. So that's what they're looking at building that. And they didn't when he came out, but I think that they probably will within a few weeks.
So then we had the Santino Marella announcement. He'll be facing Antonio Cesaro for the U.S. title on the SummerSlam pre-show. So finally Cesaro gets his championship match after beating the guy twice on television. We had the return of Piper's Pit, and fans got to choose the guest, Miz, Dolph Ziggler, or Chris Jericho. Take your pick. So we had Piper and Sean talking backstage, and Sean got a phone call. And as it turns out, Triple H, for whatever reason, decided he was going to fly coach for once. And
I think he said fly commercial.
Commercial, I'm sorry. Yeah. Fly commercial, and he's not in the building. And Sean is very concerned. We had Heath Slater and R-Truth. R-Truth beat him, obviously. And then the primetime players came out and beat him up. No AW, obviously.
No mention either, though.
No, he's gone. And they announced that the tag team titles would be defended. Truth and Kofi against the primetime players at SummerSlam. So there you go. Had a bunch of touts.
No Primo and Epico on that match.
Nope.
And then no Primo and Epico on the show, nor Rosa. And I don't think Rosa went on tour this weekend either.
Yeah.
I don't know that as a fact, but I don't believe so.
We had the series of touts from Mark Henry. He was in London for the Olympics. They really put over the Olympics big, put over NBC, all sorts of...
That was weird.
Pro-Olympics have, well, NBC Universal.
Oh, no, I know that. It's usually...
A friendly shout-out. And yeah, then we had the...
I mean, it's just... I just know that... did you hear Vince's, thing when they asked Vince about the Olympics about 3 weeks ago?
No, I don't remember.
Just that he was going to celebrate when the Olympics were over.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah. But, no, Mark Henry was complete babyface. Some big smiling guy. So I don't know what that means, if he's going to be like that when he comes back, but... He certainly indicated that that's what he was doing, that's what he's going
to
be.
They asked us to tout what we thought about the idea of Booker T canceling Alberto Del Rio's match, and we did in fact get touts later. They were better than they've been. I will say that.
Not much.
They were better than they've been. But you're right.
Not good enough. They weren't good enough that I would put on television.
Have you ever seen a tout you would put on television?
I probably have, but probably not on wrestling. I mean, I mean a fan sound. I don't know where a fan soundbite in 15 seconds is going to be. It's going to be good anyway.
Yeah.
It comes off as. I mean, it wasn't. Look, it could be worse. I mean, it wasn't. It's not so much. It's not so much on the show that it bothered me, but it's useless. I mean, I shouldn't say it's useless. They got stock in the company. It's just I don't know. Doesn't serve any entertainment purpose. Just a way to push one of their properties.
We had Tensai and Sin Cara. They did a few spots, and then Sin Cara pinned him with a DDT. And of course, Tensai destroyed Sakamoto afterwards. And this was a useless segment, really.
The 1 minute was a decent minute.
A decent minute, but. I've seen Tensai beat up Sakamoto for...
A decent minute's all you're going to get from this.
I've seen Sakamoto get beat up for about the last 3 months now. No one knows
that means absolutely nothing.
Anything about Sakamoto. Nobody cares. So I don't even know why they keep doing it.
No one cares about Tensai either. He's gaining weight back, too.
Yeah. So Sean was looking around for Triple H backstage. Apparently he figured a stage hand might know where Triple H was, even though he didn't.
I thought he was looking around about... to make sure Lesnar didn't jump him.
Well, he wasn't looking around very well because Lesnar completely snuck up on him later in the show.
Yeah, and then didn't jump him.
And he just looked at him as if to say, you are a poor hunter. We had Roddy Piper.
Is that what he said?
No.
I know.
Roddy Piper was out there and Jericho was chosen to be the guest on Piper's Pit. I don't know... I know what happened here. Roddy Piper was on the mic without a script. I guess they probably figured Jericho.
No, they had a script. Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper was bad tonight.
He was hideous, and
Vince went out. Vince went after him too.
He did. He told Cole to talk about how this segment sucked.
Yeah, Vince. Vince was really upset. I mean, I was shocked that it came off the way it came off because it was only like about a minute into the segment when Vince told Cole to say, you know, just basically bury the segment. And I was like, you know, it's Roddy's bad, but. I don't think that the average person at home is realizing that Roddy was off, and I don't know why he's off. He looked, I will say this, Roddy looked, even before this segment, when they did the backstage thing with Sean, and, you know, again, he was just on TV, June 23rd? So we're talking only a couple weeks ago.
July 23rd.
Yeah, July 23rd, yeah. He looked like something's wrong with him. And I hate to, you know, hopefully he just didn't sleep. He looked like a different person than even like, you know, again, than just a couple weeks ago. So I hope that there's nothing, like I said, I hope it's nothing that serious, but whatever. He didn't look healthy.
He was rambling and going from here to there and throwing out weird lines.
He acted like he had no familiarity with the product, even though, again, he was just on TV twice.
Yeah.
He's been on TV twice in the last, whatever it's been, 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
So finally they had Ziggler, not a moment too soon, by the way, Ziggler and Vicky came out, and then Miz came out, and the whole thing ended up with a big schmoz that led to a three-way, which AJ announced on Twitter during the break. Jericho, Dolph, and The Miz in, it's actually a pretty good match.
Yeah, best match on the show.
That's not saying much, but pretty good match. Went through a couple of commercial breaks, if I recall correctly, and did a lot of cool spots. And the finish saw Jericho have the win, but Vicky took the ref. Jericho had Miz in the walls, and Ziggler then snuck up behind and hit a zigzag and got the pin there strongly. Putting over this idea that Jericho can't win the big one, and even though he's leaving very, very soon, I'm not going to bet any money because of how things work, but pretty sure he's winning on Sunday. He pretty much guaranteed it as a babyface, so I can only presume that...
I don't know because he is leaving. So
he is?
It doesn't really make sense for him to win, but
I figure he's going to win.
And then get destroyed on TV the next night?
Perhaps. And then when he comes back, presumably Dolph will be a champion by then or higher on the cards, and they can have their feud.
Yeah. I don't know how quick he's coming back.
Well, I don't know how quickly Dolph's going to win the title. It could be next year.
I don't know. It shouldn't be that long.
Or
I wouldn't be surprised if Dolph wins the title on Sunday.
I was going to say, maybe Jericho can beat him, and then Dolph wins the title, and then they do a rematch on Raw, and Dolph beats him, and Jericho goes on his merry way.
Very possible. Very possible to go like that, yes.
We shall see. So Eve came up and congratulated Punk on turning heel without using those words. And he said, "I'm not a heel," without using those words. And she just smiled as if she knew better.
She knew better.
Yeah. So Sean's backstage and Cena sees him, and Sean says he's all distracted and he leaves, and then Cena turns around and there's Punk. And Punk vowed to not stab anybody in the back at SummerSlam. So I guess the question now is, who does he stab in the back at SummerSlam?
Well, it has to be John Cena, because he stabs Big Show in the back. That didn't accomplish anything.
That's true. Another Wade Barrett hype video. Going back to his roots, we talked about last week.
Yeah, he got too soft wrestling or something.
Yeah, he needed to go back to the real deal.
Yeah.
And now he's coming back to wrestling. Doesn't make any sense.
His videos almost make him a babyface.
Yeah, maybe he will come back as a babyface.
I don't know. I think he's better as a heel, but we'll see.
Didn't he do an interview saying he hoped to never be a babyface?
I don't know.
I think he did. Layla and Caitlin faced...
That's not going to happen.
Eve and Beth.
That was a pretty nothing match.
I thought it kind of sucked.
Yeah. I mean, crowd certainly didn't care.
Caitlin pinned Beth. And I don't know what that leads to. Probably nothing.
Well, it leads to Caitlin against Eve on at tomorrow night's SmackDown tapings. And the winner becomes Booker T's assistant. So that's it was to build up that, really.
That makes sense. So we had the Big Show, Daniel Bryan against Punk and Cena match. Another long match. I think another couple commercial breaks this went through.
Went through one break.
Yeah. It had a pretty good match, although...
It had its story. It told its story. It was mostly Punk in there. I mean, mostly Big Show in there. I mean, Bryan wasn't in the ring much at all.
To me, it was the storyline just was too distracting to me.
Really?
Basically, nobody wanted to get along with anybody else, and
yeah.
It was like, you know, when the match is going through at least one commercial break, that's a long match of guys not getting along with anybody else. And
I thought Daniel Bryan, I thought, was just tremendous.
He's always tremendous.
It's like ordering Big Show and just being a heel. And just when he came out, I mean, like when he came out, like the crowd reacts to him like he is like a big freaking deal. Like it's like a real star reaction.
Oh, yeah.
With all the, you know, the whole no thing and the yes thing and all that. I mean, whatever it is, they like to react to him. I'll say that. And, you know, him just, you know, again, him. I thought him ordering, I thought he was great. Match, you know, was what it was. I mean, it was basically Cena getting worked out over for a while, Punk coming in, then Big Show, I think, elbow dropped Punk, and they worked him over as well. Then Punk went to tag Cena, and Cena had rolled off the apron, so he wasn't there. And then Punk did a bunch of Cena moves. Cena did a couple of Punk moves, and then they went to the finish.
I mean, they did a good job putting the story together, but when it was over, I just kind of felt like, okay, so who's wrestling who, and why should I care, and why do they care, and why?
Cena and Punk are going to go at it with Big Show, and I wouldn't complain about it that way.
Well,
I don't, when it was over, did they make you want to see that three way? I would.
Yeah, but half the match was Daniel Bryan, you know, commanding Big Show to do as he said, and then, you know, Big Show finally just got out of the ring, and then Daniel Bryan got pinned, so Big Show laughed at his incompetence, and these guys have nothing to do with anything at SummerSlam.
Well,
so.
He probably have something to do, but I mean, the one thing with Daniel Bryan, they mentioned it, but they really did nothing for him in his match with Kane at all.
No.
And I'm guessing, I mean, you know, I mean, I know that the term anger management was used three times on the show, but they sure never mentioned Charlie Sheen once, and they didn't last week either.
Well, I do know that when they first, it was on the July 23rd Raw when they first did the thing with Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah. They pushed it there. And, I mean, it hasn't been in the media, and you would think at this point they would be pushing it in the media as well.
Well, that night, I mean, we were both kind of given the impression that the angle, if they did one, was going to take place at SummerSlam. So I still would, I mean, personally, I would still announce that Charlie Sheen is going to be there. But I mean, if Charlie Sheen is...
I would think that you would keep bringing his name up.
Yeah, but maybe they... I don't know. I would have done it, but maybe they just figured, well, Charlie Sheen is going to be there, and he's going to do something to Daniel Bryan. That's going to get us tons of media pubs, so may as well just...
Why don't you build it up? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make sense that they don't bring up that Charlie Sheen's going to, you know... I don't know. I mean, if they
I don't
do
know
it,
why
if they do it. It makes no sense that they didn't promote it.
But if Charlie Sheen is not going to be at SummerSlam and this whole deal fell through, why would they keep plugging his show? Essentially,
that's what I'm curious about. But why if you have him in an angle, do you not on a pay per view? Do you not plug it? I mean, even TNA wouldn't be like.
Well, maybe they.
I mean, the whole idea of doing a celebrity angle is to get publicity.
But there has been no angle. They're going to shoot the angle in Los Angeles. So maybe they figure...
What, they're going to shoot the angle and they're going to, it's going to pay off at Mania?
Well, they'll shoot the angle and...
You would still build it up and say that he's going to be there.
Yeah, but maybe they figure, who cares? Who is going to carry our story that Charlie Sheen is going to be in the audience at SummerSlam? There's celebrities in the audience all the time.
Then why did they spend all that time building it up on July 23rd?
Because he said on July 23rd he would be in Los Angeles.
Right. So why wouldn't they say, hey, on July 23rd and show quotes from him and have, you know, show that thing over and over. He's going to be in Los Angeles. He's, you know, he's going to be coming after Daniel Bryan. I mean, it's like, I mean, it's insane. I mean, it's insane for him. If he's going to be there and they don't mention on the Raw going home, I mean, what's the purpose of that? That's insane.
I don't know, but I'll bet he's there, and I'll bet he does something, and I'll bet they get a lot of pub for it. I don't know what that means for the SummerSlam,
right? I mean, look, if he does something where he knocks him down and stuff, yeah, they'll get pub for it. But so what purpose was that? If it's then already happened, and he didn't make any money off of it, then what's the point?
Maybe he has agreed to do a match at the September pay-per-view.
The September pay-per-view. Okay, we've been through this one already.
Yeah?
September pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Okay.
I seriously
doubt he's going to be on the September pay-per-view.
Because you feel they've learned from the past?
Well, that I don't know. If he ends up doing a match on the September pay-per-view and it does 95,000 buys, I would say that they've learned absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Well, maybe their theory still is, it's going to do a lot less buys, but let's bump up these B-shows.
That you could do that with an angle, but not with a celebrity angle. I mean, those things are made especially for an LA audience.
Well, perhaps he'll be at Survivor Series. How about that?
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Let's wait and see. Yeah. Damian Sandow beat Christian quickly.
There's still absolutely no reason not to to promote that he's going to be there, though.
I agree. I'm just trying to come up with reasons why they might not have.
Is how TNA didn't promote Christian for that one thing. And it was just kind of like, okay, I can see why they didn't, but why the hell was he there then?
Yeah.
What did that lead to?
Led to Damian Sandow beating him on Raw.
Yeah, all these months later, yeah.
How's that for a segue?
Okay.
Christian looked like a geek.
Yeah. But look, he's got nothing going on, and I'm glad that they're doing something with these guys, as opposed, because I was half-assed thinking that Christian was just going to pin him with Brodus Clay distraction, and it's like, well,
which they teased,
yeah. But to me, it's just like, you know, you've got these guys that you're bringing up, and they you got to give them some credibility, as opposed to, like, you know, and again with Sandow, I mean, granted, he was like the butt of the GX joke, so he needed something, so it was fine.
So this is a main show match on SummerSlam.
They didn't announce that either, but I'm sure it is, yes.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's pretty clear, you know, that it should be. I know it was on the schedule, too, so I was actually surprised that they didn't mention it, since they've been building it up for weeks, just in, you know, even to mention it in passing.
We had Lesnar sneaking up on Sean and then allowing him to walk off for the moment. Then it was time for the contract signing. Brock and Paul come out and note that Triple H isn't there. Talked about how his honor is on the line and it's the biggest match of his career, the biggest match of his life. And Heyman said that not only is it a contract signing, but I have a special hold harmless agreement here, meaning it does not matter what Brock does to Triple H on Sunday. He cannot be held liable. Said it was not going to be a competitive wrestling match. It was going to be a violent beating. And he, of course, dared Sean to come out. No Sean. Finally, he called him Yella, which you don't do to a man in Texas. So Sean came out and
he insulted Texas.
Yeah. He got into the ring and Paul was essentially begging him to sign the contract. He said, I'll honor it. So trouble looked like he was brewing, but then Hunter's music hit and he came out just in time and he signed the contract and Brock signed the contract. They got in each other's face and then Lesnar left and headed up the aisle. And this, by the way, was at 10:40 p.m., which meant we had another 25 minutes left on the show. And I was trying to figure out if there was going to be a main event that I hadn't been alerted to, if there was going to be something involving the world title. In fact, there was nothing. A bunch of short segments, including a bunch of fans saying whether or not they thought that Booker should have canceled the world title match via tout. We had Sean meeting with Hunter and saying, listen, I just want you to know that Sunday, it's your fight. I'm going to be there, but I can't help you. This guy is dangerous. He's different than all these other guys you faced, any of us have faced. So essentially be careful. And Hunter's like, I don't think I can win. And Sean just...
I almost thought they were building something up with Hunter and Sean down the line.
I didn't get that impression.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't get that impression, but I suppose it's possible. I just don't, I honest to God don't think Sean's ever having another match.
You never know.
I could be a fool.
But it's like, I believe that Sean believes it, but I've talked to guys who believe they weren't having another match, and someday, someday they go from believing it to wanting to have another match. And
yeah.
I remember when Sean, before he retired, it's about 2 or 3 years before he retired, when he was pretty much saying that he was going to retire at that WrestleMania. And he was like, you know, why can't I come back? Why can't I come back once a year until I'm in my mid-50s? It's only once a year. Everyone else does it.
Yeah.
You know, and months later, he changed his tune. And that was like, this is going to be my farewell. But I just remember him saying that. It's just like, you know what? You know, what's wrong with coming back once a year? If it's just once a year, I can do it. And other guys have had the chance to do it. So I don't know if in the back of his head, you know, I mean, I know that after retirement, and he certainly played it really well, and when, like, he did the Hall of Fame thing, and people were doing one more match, and he was just like, you know, please, you know, we don't want that. So I think that in his mind, you know, he wants to have walked away from it, but, you know, for the last many years, whenever he says he's walking away, they keep making those phone calls to him and go, hey, we got this idea, and please come to TV. And he does. You know, although, you know, in this one, it was to do what it, you know, it had its purpose and everything.
We had Stryker interviewing Big Show, and suddenly you heard this honking in the background. So camera runs over there, and Sean is in a shockingly cheap rental car, and he's being blocked by Paul, who's trying to...
crashed into him.
Huh?
He crashed into him.
Yeah. Paul's, you know... New York driver? I don't know. Bonked into him, and Sean's yelling at him and telling him to get out of the way, and Paul's not getting out of the way. And suddenly, as noted earlier, Brock Lesnar lunges in from the background and grabs Sean and says, I said I was going to get you! And he yanks him out of the car and bonks into the camera, and the screen goes black, and you just hear the sounds of agony in the background.
I like this, and I'll tell you why. Because it's obvious that there was nothing that they could do there that would be convincing that Sean was dead if you actually saw it. So they had to make you use your imagination. I like that idea.
So they go to commercial, and they come back, and the car is destroyed, windshield shattered. And all of the various geeks are standing around, and Hunter runs up and says, "What the hell happened?" And they...
He's asking AJ. What did AJ say?
She said, "Brock dragged him that away." Didn't send anybody after him, just pointed.
Yeah.
So Hunter runs off, and Brock drags Sean to the ring and hits him with an F5 and goes for the Kimura. And Triple H's music hit, and he's running down to the ring. Paul jumps on the apron and screams, "He's going to break his arm. Take one more step. He's going to break his arm." And so Hunter stops, and Lesnar has Sean in the hold, and Sean's screaming. And every time Hunter's about to take a step, Paul reminds him he'll break his arm. So, of course, the dastardly bully heel Brock breaks the arm anyway. And Triple H hits the ring. Brock goes running. Heyman's screaming, "Oh, my God, you broke his arm." And
very sarcastically.
Oh, yeah, of course. And so...
Sean was great, by the way, in selling the arm. So much better than most people would have been in that same situation.
Sean is great.
Yeah.
Sean is a great professional wrestler.
I mean, when he was out there selling it, I was thinking, like, he's got to come back at WrestleMania to face Brock. I mean, I'm not saying that he is. I'm just saying he did so well that it was like that was the match. All of a sudden, that's the match people would want to see.
Well... Yeah, I'm afraid that Sean doing an angle with anybody creates a match that everybody wants to see.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Why got to keep him out of the ring? But yes, show went off the air with Sean selling his broken arm and Hunter angry and Brock cackling and Paul cackling and I don't know. Anything can happen in WWE, as they say, but Brock has broken Triple H's arm. He's insulted Triple H's wife. And he has now broken his friend's arm, and I fully expect Pedigree clean in the middle on Sunday.
It wouldn't shock me. Maybe with Sean distracting.
Honest to God, anything else would shock me.
Yeah, I could definitely see Sean coming out there with the you know, and providing the distraction.
Yeah,
or Sean coming out and leading and having that lead to Lesnar winning for you know because of. You know, that's Triple H is out if he has to lose this match.
Yeah, but Hunter doesn't have to lose any
Sean
match.
Sean inadvertently causes it.
He doesn't have to lose any match, though. He's in charge.
He doesn't have to. I'm just saying that if the idea is that Brock's got to win this one, that's where Sean, you know, Sean can come in that way, you know, like, you know, just work Sean in some form.
Yeah.
I mean, that way Triple H can lose, but he's got his out, as opposed to, like, just, you know, losing clean.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. That was Raw. Good final angle. I think probably one of the best things about it is they gave it plenty of time. It was not rushed, as noted, when they first did the contract signing. 20 minutes left on the show to put everything together. And they left us with an angle that had a lot of impact. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and they didn't weigh the show down with a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they didn't. I mean, there was... You know, that show, when all was said and done, they had one purpose of the show, which was to sell the main event on the pay-per-view. And they had to fill 3 hours up, but they didn't spend those 3 hours trying to, you know, hammer you home with 30 different things and distract from, that ends up distracting from the one message. The one message was the key to that show. So I thought, again, good, but 3 hours is too long. I mean, that's the thing. No matter, it just is. I'll tell you one thing that is really interesting to me, and I don't even know what it is, but on Thursday, the first hour of Impact did terrible. And again, they had like almost 20% of the audience showed up at 9 o'clock. And this is after they started this thing on May 31st. And the show hasn't been bad. I mean, I don't even have an explanation other than this deal of getting people used to a new starting time. I mean, you know, I knew it would take a while, but at this point, it's like it really is telling. At again, let's see, we're in August. This thing started May 31st, so we've had 2.5 months almost, 10 weeks, And it's still almost the same as it was week one as far as people not tuning into Impact at 8 p.m. at all. I mean, there was 2 weeks where they did, and now it was, again, this one was so low. And I don't really have an explanation as to why, but I kept thinking that, you know, the time slot when it comes to television, I mean, it really is a big deal. And Creatures of Habit and all that, that's a really big deal. I mean, more than, and there's no logic to this on why it should be so much.
Well, there is a logic, and I'll tell you what it is, in my opinion. Any other TV show that you enjoy on television, for the most part, there's going to be, and this can be sports, this can be your favorite sitcom, you know, unless you're like a big fan of Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune, something like that, but they all have a season. And so you watch it for X number of weeks or months, and then you go on with your life because there's repeats for a while. Then a new season starts and everything like that. But we're talking pro wrestling, where Raw has been Mondays at 9 o'clock p.m. forever. And even with Impact, it's like Impact has not been at 9 o'clock p.m. on Thursdays for as long as Raw, but it's still at 9 o'clock. Same as with Raw. They start at 9 o'clock. And I think a show that week after week, month after month, year after year, your habit is to watch the show at this time every single solitary week for so long, it takes a long time to get out of the habit of starting. I mean, I even think that, like with Impact, I even think that people that remembered the 8 o'clock start time, I think that even if you remembered most of the time, when the Olympics came on and you started watching the Olympics and all of a sudden you're out of your groove, I can see people, like, I don't know if re-forgetting is the right term, but all of a sudden forgetting that the show is on at 8 all of a sudden because you got out of your new habit and you went back to what your old habit was for so long. I don't know if that's what happened, but I think that this habit of starting at 9 is far more deeply ingrained than people think.
Could be. I mean, the one thing that I remember is years and years ago, this is early 90s now, you know, when Jim Herd was running WCW, the Saturday show was for years and years and years. I mean, I started watching WCW on Saturday night when it was called Georgia Championship Wrestling, and this is 1979. So let's say this took place in 91, and I think that it probably was 91 when this happened, but it could have been 90. But anyway, when Jim Herd took over, which is at the end of 1988, one of his ideas was that, you know, 6:05 to 8:05 on Saturday was fine as a time, but he wanted it to move to 7:05 to 9:05 because it was prime time. I mean, he also wanted to make it a live show, and they didn't want to do that. But he wanted to move it to 7:05 to 9:05 so it's prime time. And eventually he got to do that and moved it to 7:05. And the ratings sucked, and they went way down, and they didn't come back. I mean, what ended up happening was it moved back to 6:05 because they got tired of those ratings being down at that time slot. And this was an hour later, which if nothing else, shouldn't have hurt it at all. And in time, it should have, you know, again, it's the same night, the second hour the audience is used to watching anyway. It wasn't like that the audience for hour two in the 7:05 to 9:05 slot went down in the second hour. What it was that the people, you know, and you would think, okay, you're used to watching at 7:05 anyway, but not at 6:05. But whatever it was, it never got its audience back, and they eventually had to move back to the old slot because, and I remember at that time, I'm thinking, like, how is this possible? But that's what it was. I mean, if you're a wrestling fan and they moved it back, you know, what's the big deal? But whatever it was, it really teaches you, you know, the value of, or whatever it is, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I'm just saying, it makes no sense to me, but here it is, it's happening again. And I mean, that has not, you know, again, and with Raw, as far as when Raw, if people are going to start watching that first hour or not watching that first hour, I have no idea. I don't know that it's going to take, you know, 10 weeks like it did Impact. I don't know if Impact's ever going to have that first hour consistently do well. I don't know. We're going to find out. I know when they did it in May, the goal was that they got the audience conditioned to 8 o'clock by September. It's not September yet, but we are only a couple weeks away from September. And
I was wrong, because when they did this back in May, I was like, why did you start so early? Why not wait until like July?
Oh,
how long does it take?
They thought they needed 3 months.
I know, and I figured this was preposterous. I figured people within 3 weeks would figure this out.
You would think so.
Apparently not.
You would think so, and here we are 10 weeks, and it was a noticeable difference between hour one and hour two. And I mean, and again, and they all, you know, of those viewers, they almost all tuned in at 9 o'clock. Almost all of them. Again, and we're 10 weeks in, so yeah. It's like, and it has pretty consistent. They've done a big turn on at 9 o'clock, almost every week actually. But a lot of the weeks, like the first hour, hasn't been that bad. But this last, I mean, it's been lower. But this week, I mean, it was a big difference. And again, that could be the Olympics, and then also it could be, it was, you know, for TNA on Thursday, it was a very weird night. I mean, in the sense of it was the first football game, but God, it's preseason football. But I know that, you know, I don't know that on a national basis preseason football is a big deal, but I do know that there were 5 games or 6 games on Thursday night. That means that there were 10 or 12 markets where the local team was having its first game, and it was on Thursday, and it's on a local channel. And I do know that in the city that you live in, I know from here, like when, you know, we're 49ers and everything, and when they played their first game, which was on Friday night, actually, not Thursday. But the point being is, it was a pretty big deal, that first preseason game, just because, again, there's been no football. I mean, nothing like the first regular season game, or, you know, not even close. But I do think that played a part in the TNA ratings, but TNA is going to have to go against, you know, they're going to have to go against football every week, pretty much from, you know, this point forward and regular season, and WWE the same. Although, you know, Raw ratings never got hurt by preseason football ever. I mean, in fact, you know, Raw will beat preseason football on Monday night when they start having it on Monday night. But once the regular season starts, obviously Raw will not be beating football at that point.
On Saturday night, Dana was talking about how he'd had a war of words on Twitter with Jason Mayhem Miller, and he said that now that it was over, he felt bad about it. He thought that Miller was joking, then he realized that he didn't appear to be joking, and felt bad because he knew that Jason Miller was probably in a bad place, and didn't really specify a lot, but as either coincidence
a lot
or...
A lot of people know, you know, that Miller's got some issues.
Well, yeah.
He's got some, you know, now everyone knows.
Now everybody knows. He allegedly broke into a church and apparently sprayed the fire extinguisher all over the place. When the cops showed up, he was sitting there naked. And they arrested him. And actually, I don't have an update if he's still in custody or what is...
I believe he still is. I believe he's still in custody, and then he's going to have a hearing on Wednesday.
It's not good.
Yeah, not good.
So he explained, by the way, that when they found him naked after having allegedly destroyed this church, that he appeared clear-headed.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. The fire extinguisher thing, I just think he's seen, you know, seen too many fire extinguisher angles.
Yeah. What are you getting at?
No, I'm not getting at anything. I mean, I don't know what it was, but...
I see.
I mean, I think that it's, you know, and that's probably where his impetus was from this.
Watching too much Raw?
Just, yeah, fire extinguisher angles and wrestling. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's a big-time, you know, big-time pro wrestling fan.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where would you get the idea that you just go, you go maniacally spraying the fire extinguisher, you know, all over the church?
Well, I have no idea what was going on in his head, but perhaps he thought the place was on fire.
I don't think that he's that kind of nuts.
Hmm.
I think he's just kind of like, I think he was just going through a rampage.
This was certainly a rampage. So I guess we'll have an update on the story on Wednesday, but there's a big story up on TMZ.com if you want to head up there and read more details about this unfortunate situation. All right.
You know what's funny? It's interesting is the guy who was the spokesman for the Orange County Police Department, Jim, in this case, Jim Amino, he's like really good friends with, what's the guy's name? Joker, Mike Guymon. and he's like a big MMA guy, which is just amazing that, like, this guy doing this speech, it's like, you know, he probably, like, actually knows Mayhem. It's not like this police officer who's, you know, doing, it was just really interesting to me. It's like, hey, wait, I know this guy. That's you know, when you call up the police and the guy talks to you about what Mayhem did. I mean, it's an MMA guy. It's just, I don't know, just kind of an interesting thing.
All right. Let's see. This is from Andrew, Mailbag Time. He says, question is for Dave. Which North American promotion did you see the least amount of footage from during the 80s? Any particular territory that you just couldn't get tapes or?
No, not really. Maybe the Montreal territory, international wrestling. Mm-hmm. As far as hot territories, I would say, yeah, because like with Montreal, like they had a really hot angle with the Rougeaus with Kerry Brown, and I forgot who else. Maybe it might have been Kerry Brown and Tonga, you know, who later became Haku. And I remember, like, you know, they did like 15,000 people at the Forum in Montreal with that feud. And I never saw any of it. I saw all the Rougeaus and Garvin stuff though, which was really great stuff. But I saw some of when Brody was there with Bruiser Brody and Buster Brown Brody, believe it or not, who was Tim Brooks. I saw some Montreal, but I didn't watch Montreal weekly, so that must have been a tough one. I'm trying to think what else. Crockett, you know, Mid-Atlantic I saw constantly. Georgia I saw constantly. Florida I saw constantly. Mid-South I saw constantly. As far as Leroy McGurk's territory, which was still around in the early 80s, I think it died maybe 81, 82, did not see that. Oregon saw pretty consistently. Stampede saw pretty consistently. Vancouver didn't watch that much of, but it wasn't hard to get. Just I didn't have a lot of interest in it. Hawaii I saw, you know, not all the time, but sometime. So I would say of Montreal would probably be the best answer to that question.
All right. This person here says...
International wrestling out of Montreal.
Why didn't WWE do anything with Bart Gunn after he won the Brawl for All? Even if he was the guy that was supposed to win, he did knock out three guys in succession. Could have been involved in feuds with Ken Shamrock, Steve Blackman, Dan Severns. Instead, he
didn't have to be a shooter. He could have been in feud with anyone. No, the mentality on Bart Gunn was that they had a contract with Butterbean, and they had this mentality that, you know, everyone knew Butterbean wasn't a real fighter, but Butterbean got a lot of wins on boxing cards against, you know, car mechanics and setups. And I think they thought that they're a tough guy. It was bad. You know, they sent Bart Gunn, I mean, as soon as he won, they sent him to a boxing trainer to get boxing skills, figuring he's a much better athlete than Butterbean. And they would do the thing at WrestleMania, and the idea is to show that, like, you know, in a real fight, you know, the wrestler beat this famous boxer, because we all knew that, you know, Butterbean really was a joke as a boxer. But, you know, even as a joke as a boxer, he'd been doing it for years, and he could hit hard. And Bart Gunn was a tough guy, but he had not really, you know, he had, what, 3 months of boxing training, and it wasn't enough to close the gap or even come close. It was very, you know, it was what it was. And then once that happened, it was like then they had no idea what to do with him, because he was just, you know, humiliated wrestling. So they just cut him. He ended up having a nice career in Japan for a number of years after that. And as it turned out, you know, Bart Gunn did some MMA starting past the age of 40. Actually beat Cabbage Carrera once in an MMA fight. Mm. But that was the deal. Yeah. I mean... The idea, people think that it was this thing where they sent him to the electric chair against Butterbean, knowing he was going to get killed because they were mad that he did well. It was actually the exact opposite. The idea was that he was going to be the one who showed, you know, against this, you know, I mean, Butterbean at the time was a very famous boxer. He was kind of a household name. I mean, he'd be on, it was Letterman. I think it was probably Letterman. I'm sure it wasn't Letterman now that I think about it. Whatever it was, he was on Jay Leno probably. I'm guessing. I just, you know, he was on all the time, regular guest. They would make fun of his weight and all that. I mean, he was a pretty big personality. And you know, again, I'll say household name is probably pushing it a little bit, but he was pretty darn famous. And I think that that was their whole idea of, you know, that they would, you know, prove that wrestlers were tough guys. And, you know, sometimes that works. I mean, like you know, in Japan, they've done that too. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it backfires on you when it's not scripted. And I think WWE, if you ever noticed since that fight, I don't think they've had too many unscripted matches since then.
This person says, whatever happened to Lash LaRue?
He was an artist, last I heard.
He's an artist, and he's a youth minister.
Is that what he's doing?
Okay. Yeah. I just read an article about him a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
He's now a youth minister, and if you go to his website, you can see his art. He's done a lot of art as well.
Yeah.
All right, one more here. This person wants to know about rumors Kennedy was fired from WWE. Was it because he got injured in his return match, or was it because he did a back suplex to Orton and dropped Orton on his head? And did Orton have
what happened? Yeah,
fit backstage because of it. I think actually the dropping him on his neck was the straw that broke the camel's back. There were
He had a lot of heat.
He had a lot of guys that didn't like him. And as soon as he hurt Orton, it was like everybody came out of the woodwork, and that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, they all buried him. Yeah. And, you know, the office wasn't exactly happy with him either because, you know, he went out there and it was like, you know, after the Benoit thing, you know, he asked to go on TV and do these things, and he was their poster boy for, you know, not doing steroids. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, he was doing steroids while this policy was going on. And, I mean, it was a big embarrassment to the company, the way he handled it. And so that didn't help him any. And
it wasn't even dropping Orton on his head either. He was coming back from his collarbone injury, and he dropped him right on the bad shoulder, and Orton thought he destroyed his collarbone again.
Yeah.
That was a bad situation.
Yeah. I mean, other guys would have just been tossed up as just like, you know, normal stuff, you know, I mean, but he had enough heat coming back. I mean, you've got to remember he'd been gone for a long, long time. And it also came at a bad time. Vince was in a horrible mood that night. If you remember, it was the, Denver debacle deal.
That's right.
And, you know, Vince, they moved their TV to LA and, you know, they didn't sell a lot of tickets because they only had a week of promotion. And, they did this angle to get back at Stan Kroenke, which ended up, you know, being just a really crappy angle and a really bad television show anyway. And their rating came in really bad, as I recall, especially since they had like a week of all this mainstream publicity. And you know, they thought they were going to get a really big rating out of it, and they got actually a really terrible rating. So there's a whole bunch of things happened that put Vince on the rampage. And also put, like, you know, again, you had Cena and you had Randy Orton, United, and there were, I think Shawn was in there too, and all just saying, you know, this guy, get rid of this guy. So they got rid of the guy.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today, but we've got new newsletters coming up, new Figure Fours, new Observers, new radio shows. We have a Wrestling Observer Radio from the last several days up, and Wrestling Observer Live is up as well. Tons of radio shows, so check out the front page for more, everybody, and we'll talk to you again after a while.